Well, good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, February 12th, 2024. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips. For people who are joining through phone calls, you can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, and you can raise virtual hands by pressing star nine. Everyone who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you click on the raise hand icon, that will raise and lower the virtual hands. If you're able to use these tools, it will be helpful because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. At this point, everyone should be on mute, and I would appreciate if you can keep yourselves on mute unless speaking, because it helps us eliminate any external noise. Just a reminder that we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name before your comments, because it helps them in doing their job well. It also helps everyone who's listening on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is, and when people listen to the meeting audio, it helps them who was the speaker at the moment. We would also request speakers to please describe yourselves briefly when initially speaking. For instance, I'm a female Asian Indian. I wear reading glasses and I have long dark hair, and I'm wearing a blue yellow shirt. Chair Kalabi, at this point, I can go ahead and read the agenda and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Please do.
Okay, great. And before I start reading, I would share my screen. So if you would bear with me for a quick moment, that would be great.
Hi, Megan.
And if somebody can confirm that my screen is visible, I would appreciate that.
I can see it.
Great.
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. So as soon as I finish reading the agenda for today's meeting, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Chair Kalabia will go through the review and approval of today's meeting minutes and today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have the wonderful team from DC to give us an update about DC floating bus stops. The guest speakers include Megan Kennedy, Johannes Benehoff, James Carrington, and Megan, if I've missed anyone, please do include them when you start presenting. At 5 p.m., the committee will discuss the budget. 5:45, we will have public comments. And 6 p.m. is the time for meeting adjournment. I would stop sharing at this point. Going through the roll call of the committee members, when I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Azhar Atura, Darnese Bush, Tino Kalabia.
Present.
Vanessa Coles, thank you.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. I believe Rico is connected on this meeting. Tawan Farmer. Debbie Fisher.
I'm here, sorry.
Okay, thank you, Rico. Debbie Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Nuzzo.
Present.
Thank you. Bill Posner. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Samelford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simona. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. I just want to remind our guest speakers that if you're sharing any slide presentation, please describe that in detail for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. And Chair Calabia, we can go through the public comment in information when we get to that segment. I would ask for you to move the meeting forward at this time.
Please do. Let's move the meeting forward.
Sure.
We've seen the proposed agenda. I'll take a motion to approve the agenda. Anyone?
Moving forward.
Okay. Second. Hearing no.
I'll second Tito.
We have an approved agenda. The next item is a review of the minutes of our January meeting. Am I right, Anu?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, as was mentioned at our last get-together at the beginning of the month, we dealt with the update on elevators and escalators. We also talked about the auto doors, the automatic doors in the Metro Rail cars nowadays. We spent a long time talking about the shortfall in WMATA's budget. We mentioned how in order to deal with that budget, for example, the Riders Advisory Council had made a video and had shown it. And in fact, a couple of days after we met, they released the letter to the heads of the governments that are responsible for our funding. It was the first we heard of that, and we began at that meeting to discuss what we would do. We also, let's see, in the discussion of the budget, we heard from Doris Ray and Sandy Newsel about the process at the state government level and how quickly they're moving. In fact, Virginia is moving almost twice as fast as Maryland. And we talked about contacting our transportation officials dealing with budget matters in the different capitals. So having mentioned what we did the second time around, do I hear an approval of the draft minutes? A motion to approve?
I shall motion. Move, Tino.
Okay, thanks, Steve. A second, do I hear a second to approve the minutes?
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved. So now we're on to the agenda, and we have Megan with us. She's been a colleague of ours now for a couple of years, and it's good to have you back, Megan. What should we know about your progress with the floating bus stops?
Yeah, thank you, Tino, and everybody here who's in attendance today. It's nice to see you again. I'm Megan Kanagi. I am the Mass Transit Branch Manager for DDOT, the District Department of Transportation. Our branch is within the Transit Delivery Division, and we oversee bus priority projects in the planning stage and then coordination with WMATA kind of in general and then for projects specifically. I am just to describe myself as Anu suggested, I'm a white female. I have shortish brownish hair, and I'm wearing a red vest, calling in from my home office today. The kids are sick, so apologies if I get any interruptions. I'll try to keep it to a minimum. I'm joined by a few colleagues. I am joined by Jamie Carrington, Johannes Benehoff, and Kevin Harrison. We do have a slide presentation, a PowerPoint presentation that Jamie's going to run through just to give kind of an update on a few things and tee up any conversation. If it works for you, Tina, I'd like to turn it over to Jamie to walk through those slides.
Works for me.
Okay, perfect.
Great. Great. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Megan, for that introduction. My name is Jamie Carrington. I'm a white man with glasses and brownish, blondish, and increasingly grayish hair, wearing a headset. And thank you again for having us here to speak with you today. So I'm going to share my screen. One moment. Okay. Can someone confirm if that's coming through?
Yes, it's here. We see
Great.
it.
Great. Thank you. So the slide here is accessibility and bus priority for the WMATA Accessibility Advisory Committee, Bus and Rail Subcommittee, February 2024. And there's an image of a bus customer using a mobility scooter to board a DC circulator bus. And that person is boarding from one of our recently constructed curb extensions on Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. So as I move to the next slide, accessibility and bus priority in DC. And we really have two areas where we think about accessibility and bus priority in the bus priority program. One is, first and foremost, to be maximizing access to opportunity via transit, because we recognize that people with disabilities are twice as likely to live in a zero-car household. We recognize that slow, unreliable buses deprive people of access to basic needs and opportunities. We recognize that we have an important role to play as the Department of Transportation, also in making sure that we have access to quality transit, because you can have the fastest buses, but if they're inaccessible to the people that need them, not going to be worth very much. So when we ensure access to quality transit, we're talking about safe sidewalks and crossings, minimizing conflicts with other modes, and accessible, comfortable bus stops. And the image that accompanies this slide shows buses stopping at one of our modular curb extensions at a stop on I Street Northwest at Franklin Square. And this is similar to treatments at many other locations where essentially you have a giant slab of rubber that is put in what had previously been the curb lane, thereby bringing the curb out to where the bus is so that buses can more easily stop and people can more easily board the bus, particularly if they're making use of a scooter, wheelchair, or other mobility aid.
Jamie, can I ask one question
Yes,
before you?
please.
Could you return to that picture? That's an extension to the bus, and I suppose because it's an extension and it doesn't have a slope that I can see near the front of the bus, I gather that this is one of the floating bus stops that has an extension, not for use by bicyclists. Am I right?
That's correct. And I think in terms of terminology, floating bus stops is something that some people might use to talk about a specific type of these. What you're looking at right now is just a curb extension. There's no bike lane in this particular spot, but it's the same idea for all of our projects where we are thinking about where the curb is in relation to the bus, of bringing the curb out to where the boarding point is with the bus. So in my next slides, I'll get to some of the issues that we have to deal with when there are bike lanes that are there as well, because obviously that does introduce a complication.
Thank you, Jamie.
Right. So on the next slide, bus stop accessibility issues, to highlight kind of the most critical elements as we see it, buses need the full curb access for accessible boarding. And the key issues that undermine bus stop accessibility are illegal parking in bus zones and undersized nearside stops. So this would be, well, for the illegal parking, that's pretty self-explanatory. And I have several images here. One at the top right shows a gentleman with a mobility scooter waiting at the bus stop right by the Chinatown Arch on 8th Street Northwest westbound. And there's a truck that is illegally parked in most of the bus stop, preventing the bus from pulling all the way to the curb. So quite frankly, there's no way that that gentleman is going to be able to board that bus. And that's something that we see is an unacceptable situation. Another example of that, just on a picture below that, which actually is, I'm not sure if that's the same stop or a stop that's around the corner from there, but it's another bus coming in, this time focusing on people who were getting off of the bus. And it's completely, the curb lane is completely blocked up with illegally parked cars. So people are getting off the bus in the middle of the travel lane. Obviously, not an accessible situation for anyone with a disability, and not a safe situation or a comfortable situation for anybody. And then the final image on the left shows a similar situation at 8th Street Southeast in Barracks Row, just south of Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. And this is a place where, again, a white van has parked at kind of the rear end of the bus stop. Probably that driver thought that they wouldn't be blocking anything, but they were not thinking about the fact that when somebody needs the ramp deployed from the front door of the bus, if that ramp can't reach the sidewalk, it seriously compromises the accessibility. And so the image shows the ramp has been deployed, but in the roadway level. So I didn't actually see that. I took this picture. I didn't see who had used the ramp initially, and so I'm not sure if it was somebody who was able to get over to the curb, but certainly if somebody had a standard wheelchair or was using a mobility scooter, it would be extremely difficult for them to make that connection. And meanwhile, while those people are being deprived of the transit service that they're entitled to, everybody is delayed, including all the people who may have disabilities, may not have disabilities, who are on that bus. So this is a problem that really affects everybody.
Jamie, one fix for the problem is that very recently, fines are now being levied by the District of Columbia.
That's correct.
And that was only recent. So by now, or within a few weeks, people are going to learn their lessons when tickets, right? And that this is only true. This is only true in the District of Columbia, not necessarily in the jurisdictions also served by WMATA, correct?
That's correct. Yes. And I'm going to the next slide here of actions to improve bus stop accessibility, which is some of the elements of our projects. And as I mentioned before, the top one is building curb extensions at bus stops to allow easier boarding, to ensure that the bus doors are fully aligned with the curb, less delay, buses do not lose time merging in and out of traffic, and more sidewalk space So that there can be a clear path for anyone, and certainly an ADA clear path on the sidewalk, because it can get crowded when you're trying to have a bus shelter, and people crowding and waiting for the bus. Another action that can help buses is when we move the bus stops to the far side, because it's a lot easier usually for the bus to maneuver all the way to the curb if it's on the far side of the intersection, because it has all of that intersection to be making that merge over to the right. Near side stops are much more prone to buses not being able to pull all the way in. Longer bus zones are something we also have been doing to, again, make it easier for buses to get all the way to the curb. Outlining bus zones and having prominent lettering saying bus only just in the bus stop, that's something that also helps deter it. And then finally, for when all of those measures don't quite cut it, yes, we do have enforcement. We have clear lanes, which is where cameras are on the buses, and tickets are now being issued. We also have traffic control officers that we deploy to hot spots, such as on 14th Street and Irving and Park around DC USA. That's a place where we know that have been a lot of issues with illegal parking blocking buses. And since we've had the TCOs out there, we have been seeing some improvement in people's compliance. Oh, yes, I see a hand up.
This is Vanessa. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I do. Thank you. This is Vanessa. So I wanted to know if you could explain the conversion from the service lane on 18th and K Street to a bus-only lane.
That's not something that the K Street project is not currently advancing on. Unfortunately, there have been some kind of different debates about funding and project scope that have been going on between the mayor and the councils. So for right now, the K Street Transitway project, as it's been talked about, is not moving ahead. That
Oh,
doesn't mean that
good.
it's never going to move ahead, but it just means that for right now, the people who have more power than we do are kind of a little bit of an impasse. But yeah, that's a project that
Okay.
yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to, if I can wrap up here. So as was mentioned earlier, when we have bike infrastructure at the same place as bus infrastructure, we do have that tension between wanting to extend the curb so that you can have that boarding at the bus stop, and preventing illegal parking that might block it. But we do have to be careful with how we integrate the bike infrastructure there. So we know that protected bike lanes have proven safety benefits for all roadway users, not just for people who are riding bicycles. And our aim is to make those protected bike lanes as safe and comfortable as possible for people of all ages and abilities. That's kind of the shift that's happened with a lot of departments of transportation over the years. It used to be that if they were designing bike facilities, they'd be designing it for an athlete who's very confident and 20 years old and fit as a fiddle. But now there's a recognition that the best bike facilities are things that really can be used by people of all ages and abilities, including adaptive cycling, et cetera. So our goal is really to make those bike facilities as safe and protected as possible. So where bikes cross bus stops, DDOT designs the infrastructure thoughtfully to ensure safety and access for all. All of our projects go through a full review in terms of ADA and ProWag. We also thankfully have gotten some additional guidance from the recent supplement to the WMATA bus stop guidelines. And that's something that I know that you've also been involved in working with bus planning on the WMATA side. And so we definitely appreciate your input there. And so even though every location is unique, we are working with WMATA to try to get some consistent guidelines for bus stop elements. And as an example of that, here's a photo that is of what we would call a shared stop bus stop curb extension. This is the modular Zeekla, similar to what I have in the picture before on I Street. And on this picture, you can see a man riding an electric scooter coming to a stop so that people can board and alight from the bus at the bus stop.
Jamie,
yes.
Could you word out, everyone knows what ADA is, but could you word out what ProWag is?
Sure, of course. I guess I get so used to the acronym. For accessible. I feel like this is
Carol Lopez. I can help with
that. Yeah.
Good afternoon. I am a woman that's Hispanic, has dark hair, and I work for WMATA, and PROAC means Public Rights of Way Accessibility Guidelines.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's something that as many of you know has been stuck in purgatory for a long time and has finally gotten into actual regulations. So that's something that a lot of us are very grateful for, because it gives us some clear guidance on a lot of things that in the past did not have something that was hard and firm. It doesn't cover everything, including some of these situations that we have here, but we do our best to try to figure out the best way to address this safely. So on this slide, designing for safety and accessibility of bus stops, we're specifically looking at a place that we would describe as an island stop with a bike lane separated behind it. So these are things that we are able to do if there's a wide right of way that allows for full separation of the bike lane from the boarding platform. This particular location is on C Street Northeast. And this project was recently completed. It was a major roadway reconstruction. And some of the elements to point out here are that the bike lane ramps up at the crosswalk. There are two crosswalks here. One is located in alignment with the front door of the bus. The rear is located at the actual crosswalk that goes across C Street. It's a signalized intersection, so there are audible pedestrian signal beacons both on the sidewalk side and on the signal pole that is located in the island itself. There's a wheelchair ramp that is longitudinal with the street that goes down to the crossing. There's not, and this is some of the evolution of our designs. On this one, there's not a detectable warning strip on the ramp itself, because it's not bringing people directly down to the down to traffic, but there is detectable warnings at every location where people might be crossing active traffic, whether it's general traffic or bike traffic. And so this we would just call a bus stop island, because it does have that full separation.
Could you hold here?
Sure.
Me. because of the ramp, there's a cut into the platform itself, and there's no detectable, there's no way for a person of low vision or a blind person to know that they have to step up and then cross the ramp and then step up again. What can be done to enable low vision or blind people to know that they have to step up and step up again? Yes.
I'm sorry. So you mean, so at the ramp, you mean yeah. something to say that the person needs to go up the ramp?
No. If they're crossing from the right, they're okay. on the sidewalk, they're crossing from the right, they step down into that asphalt space, which I guess bicyclists use, then they have to step up in order to keep going to the left. You see what I mean? They're on the sidewalk, they cross the black asphalt, which okay. is the path, and then they have to step up in order to
it's all curb cuts all the way okay. flat. There's no stepping up.
Yes,
yeah. Zanu. Jamie, hi. Charlie Dingboom from Metro has also joined, and he has raised his hand. I believe he might want to add something.
Yes, so just as clarification, Jamie, I think the confusion may come to from the fact that the bike lane itself comes mm-hmm. up further down platform. So
right.
further back in the photo, where the second crosswalk is, that's not co-located with the existing crosswalk across the street. That is all flush and level with the level of the bus stop platform and the right. sidewalk. So there is no step down or step up back there where there's not the ramp located.
Well, we're talking about in front, the part, not okay. way back.
So at the bottom of the image, you mean?
What's right in front of us?
So at the bottom of this image, you're saying?
The bottom of the picture, yes. That.
Okay.
Where the arrow is now. When
it goes
going
straight across to a curb cut. I use it all the time.
Do you see what I'm asking about? Yes.
Where you hear?
Yes, where you're showing the arrow when you go from the sidewalk
mm-hmm.
and then step down into the asphalt, then you have to step up again. But for a person who is low vision or blind, they may not see that you have to step up.
So are you looking for something that's like an indicator that there is a ramp there? Or are you looking for...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, there should be some kind of signal for a person to know that they have to step up again. Then they go down onto the slope of the ramp, and they have to step up again to head towards the street.
Chino?
Do you see what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's... I mean, I guess that...
Sorry to interrupt. Jamie,
they're using their cane. They've got the detectors, and they walk straight across, no stepping at all. You're confusing them, Tino. But it goes straight to a curb cut, so that's the only way wheelchairs can get on.
No, well, I'm not talking about wheelchairs going up on the ramp and over towards where they get on the bus. I'm talking about pedestrians or even wheelchairs.
And that's where they have a curb cut. DDOT.
No, Heidi, I'm talking about someone crossing from right to left at the lower part where Jamie has just shown his arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Calabria, this is Venu. Johannes Benahoff also raised his hand. He might want to add something to it.
Sure.
And I have a question also.
Yes. And Pat yeah. Sheehan has raised, so he probably has a question or comment. So, Johannes, did you want to add something?
Yes, this is Johannes Benhoff. I also work on Megan's team. I think I understand where the confusion is, and it's because of the way that this picture from where it's taken. The part where, Tino, where you're thinking somebody would step up and step over is not the path of travel. That white line that's just under the detectable warning surfaces call-out box is like the edge of the path of travel. So if you were to the, like, would be picture up or right side, if you're crossing from right to left of that, you would no longer be in the path of travel. You'd be in the bike lane. So you wouldn't be like lined up. So any visual cue or a sensory cue from like either a surface or a cane or anything like that, you would not, you'd be like on the wrong side of the path of travel. And that's not the way that the ADA ramp from the sidewalk would direct you to. So you'd have to have walked through grass and like down a curb to get there. So you would not have been traveling like along the path of travel. Does that make sense? I think we maybe like we could find a like another picture from a different angle that would make it more obvious, but you do not have to step up and over and back down the ramp as you're describing to like have a continuous path of travel here.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. Going from right to left, you stay in the travel path. But I'm just saying that if you move farther up away from the travel path, you, and you're going from the sidewalk down to the bicycle path and then keep going left, you still have to go up something which is unmarked. But anyway, I don't want to hold you up. Just continue, Jamie.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that because so the bus stop pole, I'm pointing to, it's up in the kind of the distance in the center of the shot. That, I mean, that is a place where there's the separate crosswalk in alignment with that. So, we expect that there will probably be a lot of people that will go up and cross the bike lane in alignment with the bus stop pole. Okay. And then after people are alighting from the bus, they'd be more likely to come down the ramp and then use the crosswalk here. There would be there is a raised curb that's just on the bottom of the picture that you can't see, just out of reach, so that then if somebody was using a cane or something, that they would, in coming down, they would realize that they needed to turn to keep going.
Okay, proceed.
But let's see, there's some other hands up if there are other questions about this slide.
Sure, Jamie, this is Anu. So Pat, I see your hand is up.
And thank then you, Anu.
And Vanessa, go ahead.
Yes, I had a couple of questions. A couple of terms we're using them. It's confusing for me. My name is Pat Sheehan. I'm wearing a 70-year-old male wearing a hooded sweatshirt today, visually impaired, blind, and I've been working on throwing bus stop issue for quite a while in Montgomery County. So I'm confused about a couple of things. One, earlier on, you talked about extended curbs. Not quite sure what that is, but let's just stay here with the bus island. As I'm approaching the area where I'm supposed to go to the bus island, you said that there was an accessible pedestrian signal. Is that true?
Yes, it's
okay.
So in this location, because the rear end of the platform is in alignment with the crosswalk that's going across C Street, and it's a signalized intersection. Mm-hmm. That means that we time, there's a on the pole that's on the sidewalk, there's an APS audible pedestrian signal panel there. There's another one that is on the island, and then also over on the other side of the street.
Okay, and so when I push the button for the APS, first of all, I imagine it's making a noise so I know where it is, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. And then as I push the button to activate the APS, is it going to describe to me that there is a bus island and that I'll be crossing over a bike route to get to a bus island?
No, I am not 100% sure. And actually, let me quickly pull up to just confirm the location here. Yeah, my apologies. The there is not a beacon that is on the sidewalk side, but the beacon is integrated into the island itself that you can that's on the slide that I have here. So it's on the island, and it is guiding people for crossing C Street. The crossing that is over the bike lane itself, that's one it does not have the APS on it. It has tactile warning strips on either side of it and thermoplastic markings.
So as a blind person, I'm walking up the street and I'm trying to and this bus island's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking up the sidewalk. How do I know that the bus island is out there if I don't have an APS on the sidewalk sign?
I guess.
You've moved the bus stop from where it was on the sidewalk, where I had access to it, and you've moved it out to the first lane of traffic. And as part of ADA, you've got to provide me effective communication that something has changed. Now you see it as a visual person, and so you have it out there on the bus island. But I need to know that you've moved the bus island. The bus stop has been moved from the sidewalk to the first lane of traffic, 5 feet out. I don't know that.
Okay.
I don't have any way of knowing that.
Well, is the so as the as in most situations, we have a crosswalk that is in alignment with the bus stop pole.
But I don't, no. But you see the crosswalk. I don't have any way to know that you've moved that crosswalk. If I'm walking up the sidewalk, you see the crosswalk as a visual person. I'm just walking with my cane. I can't see the crosswalk.
But the crosswalk, this is the same location in terms of kind of the alignment along the street. The bus stop is in the same place. It's just that the pole is now on the island.
Right, which is, you've got the sidewalk, mm-hmm. you have a bus lane, correct? And then you have a bike lane, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then you have the island, the bus island.
Yes.
Okay, so the bus isn't in the same place. How do I know that there is a bicycle path there for me to cross, and that you've moved the island out to 5 feet out into the sort of the first lane of traffic there? So we've done this in Montgomery County, and so what I need to have on the sidewalk is the same thing you have on the bus island, with a pole, an APS type pole. Then when I push it, it's going to say, you are now at a bus island. You will be crossing the bus island, you know, to cross a bike lane. And they'll give probably the bike lane, you know, the bike lane, either a flashing yellow, flashing red, or whatever. But there's no, you know, you've taken away the bus stop for me, but there's no effective communication to tell me that it's been moved.
Carol,
I would imagine you understand what I'm saying from the ADA. You've got to provide effective communication that something's been moved.
Sure. Oh, I just see Megan has her hand up and may have something additional to add on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pat, thank you so much for that comment. And I think we definitely understand what the point that you're making, and several of us have been out and saw the pilot demonstration that Montgomery County did with some of, I think they had some of what you're describing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So I think we're very interested in understanding what a regional standard would look like for that. I think to your point, right now, we're relying on, things like travel training or being able to, provide information on our website or other ways to try to let riders know about the presence of these stops or doing presentations at meetings like this. But, but I do think I hear what you're saying about how do we communicate to someone who may not be able to see that the stop configuration has changed that has, and how they're going to access it. So, that is something that unfortunately we don't have that national guidance on yet, but DDOT is definitely a very, cooperative partner in trying to identify solutions here. And I think another opportunity is having announcements on the bus itself, because it's not just getting to the bus stop, right? It's also getting off the bus and then making your way to the sidewalk too.
Right. Yeah, that's a good, and it looks like you've got, to be proactive here rather than just critical. It sounds to me like you've got a lot of the pieces in place. And what, I think we could be willing to do on the Montgomery County side is take a look at where they are and see if we can get an additional APS installed at the sidewalk level or whatever signalized light that they're looking to use. Because the other thing that you've mentioned that's critical is that you have uniformity. So what I see in Montgomery County is what I'm going to see in DC, is what I'm going to see in Virginia. So, part of what we'd love to be able to do, Tino, I may be speaking out of turn, but I think at least try to bring a regional standard so that if we have to do some upgrades and put in more signalizing in locations, or they have a better way to do this, we certainly would love to be able to share that with them.
Sure.
This is Carol, I see your hand is up. Did you want to add something?
Yes. I wanted to share that both in Montgomery County and now in Virginia, they're also adding a tactile guidance tile that goes all the way across the sidewalk. So if you're caning as you're walking on the sidewalk, you will be aware that there is something that has changed. There's guidance tile. If you're looking for that bus stop, it would alert you that perhaps something's going on there. And we're looking at seeing if we can provide a post that's not a bus flag, but something that's recognizable at the sidewalk level, so that someone who's blind might recognize that as, oh, there's a bus stop and there should be some braille information there telling you that the bright and raised lettering that there's a bus stop ahead, and then you're crossing a bike path. But one of those tools, I don't know, Patrick, you've been involved with Montgomery County. They use that. How effective do you feel that is?
It's not as effective as an APS, because I won't know that I'm at, you're able to see that pole. The writing is pretty high up on the pole. I understand it's not providing effective communication, the same kind of communication that someone, visually, you can go out and look and see the bus stop is moved, so you know how to traverse to it. I don't have that same opportunity. But rather than argue all of that here, what I think would be, and I don't like to say right and wrong and all that stuff. So what I'd like to be able to propose is that we get some people together to take a look at what is being done in DC, and be able to provide suggestions sort of moving forward after we've taken a look at some of the things that are going on in Montgomery County, and that would be a nice good spring project to be able to walk some of these areas and give some guidance based on what our knowledge is. The other thing that I was curious about, and we don't need to go through it here because I think this would be a good project for us to do, would be to go and take a look at extended curbs. I'm not quite sure what they are. I think I know, but that might be another area where we can show some improvement. What I'm seeing here on this bus stop, particularly with what's on the bus island, is that you're a good way along for making it accessible. And so congratulations on that. I think that there are some improvements that we can make on the sidewalk side so that we can have that kind of effective communication. But let me take a look at what's going on in Montgomery County, and we can see if we can make that, kind of part of the universal design going through in DC.
This is, and I've been on Matt Johnson. Matt Johnson does this kind of work for Montgomery County, and he has held walking tours to show us the different kinds of ways they handle it in Montgomery County. Aside from that, just and I don't want to prolong this, but supposing you're not interested in going up the ramp and over to the bus stop, which is in the far part of the picture, but you're just a pedestrian trying to go from the right-hand side of the picture to the left-hand side and cross the street. There still is this, it's possible for you to stumble. Yes, that where you're showing the arrow, Jamie, if you're just going from the right-hand side of this street to, and you want to go to the left-hand side and cross the street, you still have this kind of stumbling block. But you know what I what I mean. But why don't you proceed, because we're running out of time.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I think I follow you now. And yes, the whether or not to have the APS here on the island or on the sidewalk and how to manage that crossing. Yeah, that's definitely something that we can look at. I mean, as far as it comes for guidance and regional consistency, we are absolutely in favor of that. We really are looking to WMATA to help us make sure that we're on the same page with everybody. I mean, I think that there will always be limitations in terms of situations where, I mean, it would be great to be able to have a signal with APS at every crossing, but in the kind of the traffic engineering framework that we're working within, that's always going to be really hard. And we always do our best. And I know that with WMATA, it's always a tension between wanting to make sure that every bus stop is as close as possible to a controlled intersection, so you have a signalized crossing. But we all know that unfortunately there are a lot of bus stops that are at crosswalks that do not have a signal. And that unfortunately that's something that just by virtue of traffic signals not being viable everywhere, that it's something that we have to work with. And so what we do is focus on just slowing people down, whether they're riding a bike or driving, and trying to make things as simple and clear as possible. And I don't think we'll never nail it perfectly. But I definitely appreciate all the input that we're getting from WMATA and from the committee. So if I may, I just wanted to cover
Please.
on this next slide. This is kind of the other main variety of kind of bus stop that integrates a bike lane. This is called, we would call it a shared stop. And this is in locations where if there can't be a full separation of the bike lane from the bus stop boarding platform, that in essence, the boarding platform, which is the curb extension, so that's where we expand the sidewalk out to where the bus is stopping, so the bus doesn't have to pull over. But that because there is a protected bike lane here, our main focus, then there's not enough room to create a full separation. Our focus here is ensuring that cyclists slow down, know to expect that there is conflict ahead, and knowing that they need to stop for people who are walking to get on the bus, or perhaps even more importantly, people getting off of the bus. And so in the photo image that I have here, that's kind of from a the perspective of somebody who might be riding a bike along the bike lane approaching the bus stop, there are a number of cues that we use to slow people down. We have green paint throughout the entirety of the conflict zone. So that highlights for cyclists that they're approaching an area where there may be conflicts with other road users. We have detectable warning surfaces at all crossings where people might be crossing from the sidewalk out to the boarding platform. We also have it on the roadway edge, which in this situation we do because we want to make sure the people getting off of the bus know that they may be crossing a place where there is cross traffic. We have vertical signs on either side of the where the bike lane transitions into the bus stop area, that we have a narrowing of the bus stop. All of these things visually and psychologically combine to encourage people to slow down if they're riding a bike through there. And we also have the same situation as in the island, where we ramp the bike lane up to the sidewalk level, which is kind of another slowing mechanism, almost a mini speed bump, if you will. And so this is something where it's not our preferred design, but sometimes it's the only way that we can facilitate it. The photo that I'm showing is a location at Eastern Market Metro on Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast, going eastbound, which is one of our more heavily used examples of this this type of treatment. And I do see that there's some hands up. I didn't know if anyone needed to chime in.
Hi, yes, so we have Steve Kaplan, then Philippa, and then Vanessa. So Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Very interesting presentation, thank you. Okay, I'm Caucasian, black hair with some braying, wearing a blue shirt and button down, and there we are. That's enough for now. First, we've spent a lot of time on these islands, and rightfully so. And one thing that always seems to come up is just possibly adding a bump, a bump. And it's just a slight bump, and it doesn't have to be a big thing. Just a slight bump at the beginning area to make it not just a visual reminder for the bike rider, but also a feeling reminder. That's just a comment. You don't have to answer, but I think that would. You can have all the colors that are wonderful looking down, but oftentimes people are looking straight ahead and looking around, and something other than just visual might be useful. The second thing is, I'm finding all too often that the bus operators are not always sensitive to where the obstructions at bus stops are. And I'm thinking particularly of, let's say, trees that are planted, or maybe areas that are gardened off with little with hedges and things like that. They get the front stop, they get the front door right, but I'm finding all too often they don't get the back door right. And the other aspect is that I'm finding that they're sometimes not as close to the curb as they could be. Now, there are times where they just can't be, but I'm finding all too often people have to hop off and then walk back onto the curb. The way I think it might be handled is, I'm sure there's training that the bus operators go through periodically, and this might be added to the training for them just to be cognizant of those situations. There's a lot they have to think of when they're operating a bus, but these are important. But but here's another comment. Wisconsin Avenue. if and 18th Street. It seems as though, and I think it's the prior administration, gave a lot, DC administration, gave a lot of license to terraces extending into the street. And it's great. We all love terraces in the street, but only a limited number of people are dining in those terraces, and yet they serve as obstacles to cars and buses 24 hours a day. So there needs to be somewhat of a balance. I notice in winter, for example, on Wisconsin Avenue, there are terraces that were set up for the summer, but haven't been used since October. And yet they are obstacles to the buses coming down the street as well as the cars. This needs to be a discussion between WMATA, I think, and the city and the DDOT to determine maybe these should be taken in during the winter months, or maybe there should be more stringent criteria for providing these, because they do slow down traffic considerably and create hazards for bus stops, as you know, on Wisconsin Avenue. And the last question, this is a question. Who has been paying for these islands, which seem to be quite expensive? Or is it the city? Is it DDOT? Is it WMATA? Is it a grant from the government? Who's been paying for these? Because they look very pricey.
Sure. Yeah, I can. Yeah, just to cover your thank you for your comments. To go kind of in quick, maybe I'll start at the end and move backwards. So, in terms of price,
by the way, you may just want to. You know, time is of the essence. So you may just want to keep these in your memory, and just take a look at some of these and see if they serve some feeder for some ideas or changes or
sure.
training.
Sure, I will say on the streeteries, as we call them, the portmanteau of street and eatery. So that the streetery program, the project manager is named Kim Vacca, VACCA. And there's actually a process going on right now of updating the regulations, because they were the regulations were temporary regulations that came up during the pandemic to enable people to eat outside more easily. But the yes, I think everybody recognizes that the current state of affairs is not ideal, but we also want to, where it makes sense, allow that flexibility. So that's a process that's going on right now and is getting a lot of accessibility is a major element of that. And I just wanted to quickly, and if you
oh,
don't.
Who's paying for the islands?
Oh, for the island. So, well, every piece of street infrastructure that is in the right of way in DC, DDOT controls. So, yes, that's DDOT is paying for that.
There are two other questions.
No, thank you. Thanks.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Philippa, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am an African-American female, and I'm wearing a face mask and a T-shirt honoring my hometown, Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl champions. You know I was going to get that in sooner or
yes,
later, right?
Hey,
yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I just wanted to applaud WMATA. I think you're doing everything to make these islands safe and secure. But I'm on record, I hate them. You can't, if you're dashing for a bus, used to be you're on the sidewalk, you could just dash. Now I have to go all the way past the bus, come around that railing, and try to get to the bus. Heaven forbid there's a bike in the bike lane, because usually they're on the sidewalks weaving between people and, you know, coming right up on us and weaving around instead of using the bike lane. But if they use the bike lane, they still don't want to stop. So I'm agreeing with, if there is something that, I guess that's outside of WMATA, that's probably the city, something to do to kind of slow them down when they're in that lane. Also, the islands are so narrow that people are kind of bumping into each other. And if there's a wheelchair or a grocery cart or something, you're just stuck in place until everybody moves. Whereas if you're on a sidewalk, you have room to get around. So that takes a lot of time and it's irritating. But I just wondered, is there some law that's promoting these islands? I mean, is that law as old as the ADA? So at any rate, I know there's nothing you can do about it, but it's also added expense. You're talking about the expense of who's building the islands, that's the taxpayers, but you're also, WMATA is trying to do everything to make those stops accessible with the sound systems, et cetera. And that's taking a lot more money out of WMATA's pocket. But I don't know what we can do about it. But anyway, just on record, I hate them. And bikers do not slow down, no matter where you put them. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. I realize that, yes, this is not something where we're going to please everybody, but we definitely try to do our best to balance the needs of everybody, because everyone does have the right to be safe when they're trying to get from point A to point B, whatever way they are using to get there. And so some of the, as far as slowing down, there are some of those element design elements that I covered. Steve mentioned another thing about having the little bumps, which is a great comment. Thank you for that. And that is something that we use. It's not quite as big as a full-on speed bump, but we kind of do little mini speed bumps in some locations to contribute to the slowing down. But with all of our projects that we have, we do significant outreach and observations, because as we've talked about before, this is kind of an area where there's not a lot of very specific design guidance. So we don't have a book that we can easily turn to that will say, do this, this, and this. And so a lot of our experience is trying to make sure that what we're putting out there is as safe as possible. Anytime we have a new facility like this, we send staff out to collect information, talk to people who are using it, learn things about potential gaps that maybe we had when we were designing it. Over 130 staff hours at over 44 bus stops that have islands or shared stops, handing out hundreds of postcards to all road users. We created an educational website with kind of a how-to video and map of island and shared stop locations. We also do direct outreach to people who are riding bikes. If we have a new facility that people maybe haven't, people who are riding bikes there maybe don't realize that they're passing through an area with a bus stop that people are crossing. So we created, there's an image on the right-hand side of the slide that is kind of showing the perspective. It's a graphic we made up with our marketing team, and it shows the perspective of someone riding a bike towards a shared stop type of situation. And at the top, it says in big letters, "Stop for bus riders." It shows a woman getting off the bus in front of the person riding, and some other people on the sidewalk who may be about to board. And so those are things where when the bike lane opens, we go out, we post those signs up, we wave them around. Sure, are we going to reach everybody? Unfortunately not. I mean, for everybody who uses the street and doesn't do everything that they're supposed to, unfortunately, we can't control everybody, but we do our best. Unfortunately, we have not observed or gotten any reports of bike and pedestrian crashes at any of these stop locations that we have so far. So it's something that we realize is not going to be perfect for everyone, but that we are doing a lot of different techniques to mitigate any kind of safety or accessibility concerns. And that was my final slide, just leaving some contact information here. If anyone wants to leave a voicemail for us, we'll give you a call right back. The number is 202-671-2376. Our email is buspriority@dc.gov. And our website is buspriority.ddot.dc.gov. And if there are any additional questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Thank you, Jamie. Chair Calabria, this is, I know we do have three hands up. Did you want to go ahead and take those questions by the committee okay. members?
I'll let them be short. We're running out of time. Please. Sure.
So the first one would, the first person is Thomas Mangrum, and then Doris Ray, and then last person is Vanessa Coles. So Thomas, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for putting up the signs that say pedestrian crossing and stop. But a lot of times when you got some bike lanes, there's no signs right there at the bus stop letting people know. And like the lady said, that bikes don't really slow down for people. So you had the little bump right there at the bus stop, not just at the crossing to get to the bus, or to get to where the bus stop is, but right there at the bus stop, letting the people know that they got to slow down. They got to watch out for people. That would be really helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Next. The next, is it Doris or who's next?
Yes, it's Doris. I wanted to say that I'm a native Washingtonian and lived much of my life in the city, but I'm now in Virginia. And my concern about this whole thing is that we're going forward from the very beginning of the discussion about the bus islands, the floating bus stops, that with the idea that this is going forward. But, you know, right now, relatively speaking, I believe there are a small number of them. And over time, we have developed, particularly since the ADA's enactment, we have developed facilities and infrastructure for accessible bus stops. And most of it was predicated on most of the stops being pulling up to the curb. And in addition, people with disabilities use the curbs in order to, if they're riding a paratransit vehicle or a taxi, to pull up and safely get onto the sidewalk. And I just think that there should be some discussion here about the larger picture of why are we doing this? Why are we going back from what has been developed over my lifetime into a safer situation for a person with a disability who is reliant on public transportation and has no recourse to a private vehicle, and probably not also for, it's not viable to use a bicycle. Why is preference being given to cyclists and micromobility device users rather than continuing on the course of having bus stops that we can navigate to and safely use the bus in? And as urban planners and transportation planners, I don't think we're getting a fair shot at it. And the second thing I want to say is, and I know in the district you are dealing with mainly, you know, urban streets and sidewalks and stuff, but in the greater metropolitan area, there's a different situation for the usage of this, and it's still exploding. So I don't know whether folks here are going to consider me an old fuddy-duddy about this, but I just do not know why we're going forward with making it less safe for people with disabilities to use the bus service they're reliant on, and not rather improving that access and spending all kinds of money on bike lanes and floating bus stops and such.
Agreed.
So and I don't know whether there's some economics in this that you have studied that say that cyclists and micro-mobility device users are a greater number in the economy and whatever, and therefore they should have these facilities, but it really, or that they are really making that much difference in the ecology of things. And wish we would stop. Okay, so thank you, Chino. I've been meaning to stop.
Jamie, I don't know how you can respond. Please.
I think actually Megan would like to speak to this one.
Just real quick, Doris, and thank you for those comments. I appreciate it. And I think what we're trying to move towards is a city that absolutely is accessible. That's very important to the district. It's safe for everyone, absolutely, especially our most vulnerable roadway users, like our pedestrians or people with disabilities. But that is also a place that people can bike around and don't have to rely on a car, particularly if, you know, transit isn't an option for where they live. So I think, you know, the other thing is that we're getting direction from our executive leadership to build out, you know, more bike facilities, more protected bike facilities, as well as more bus lanes and bus priority projects. And so that's where you're seeing that investment being made. So there is some change happening out there. Some of these things are a little bit newer. We're seeing how they're working. We're making changes to the design based on feedback to try to improve them. But that's where the direction is coming. It's coming from our long range plan, Move DC, which is coming up for an update. In the next year, we'll be doing public engagement. So I encourage everybody, we can let everyone know when that's open for comment. And that's really kind of a part of how our, you know, mayor is telling us that as far as moving forward in the direction of the cities, we want to make it a place that's safe and accessible and that you don't need to rely on a car. That means facilities to make transit work better. It also means making sure people can bike around. So that's kind of what we're trying to balance there in terms of that direction.
You, Megan.
Yep.
Was that the last one?
Vanessa, if you would unmute yourself and make your comments or question.
Okay, thank you. I am an African-American middle-aged woman with curls in my hair and a black t-shirt. So my concern for security, and I'm going back to 18th and K Street, in particular 1825 K Street, where Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind is located. Because that is a service road, it is very difficult for the vans to find a spot to dislodge people in wheelchairs or dislodge anyone. They have to either go further down the street, or maybe the parking attendant will allow them to put the ramp down to discharge the clients. But not only that, it is also an area where cars park at the curb. So if Uber is letting us out, but they're nice enough to walk us to the door, we have to weave our way through cars and maybe a flower plant to get to the door. Is it possible to add a dedicated ramp somewhere along that towards the edge, the curb, or somewhere where that Uber can pull over because cars blow at them if they stop to try to dislodge us? People get angry because they have to wait for us to get to the door to install a ramp at the curb so we'll have a dedicated place to dislodge.
Yes.
Sure. Thank you for that. We can raise that And actually, I don't know if you've already submitted a 311 request for this, but that would make sure that it gets into our system. But we will also work on that, because we can change the curb regulations. Putting in a new ramp might be a little more difficult, but we can we can look into that.
So you okay. Say me as a citizen or the building facility managers?
Beg your pardon?
To put in this request.
Oh, you yourself, if you don't mind, because yes, you are absolutely. This is the public right of way that is DDOT's, and you as a citizen, yes, you are just as worthy of requesting attention as the fancy building manager.
Okay, thank you, James. I just want to echo Steve's suggestion. He and I, maybe 18 months, two years ago, we suggested rumble scripts. Hello. We suggested rumble scripts for bikes, and you apparently have taken some measures to do that sort of thing. In any event, both you, Jamie, and Megan, you know, we seem persistent. We don't want to seem obstinate or obstacles. We know that you're doing the best you can, and I, for one, have always found you all agreeable and tried to do. We know you're doing your best. We just don't want to sound like we're aggravated that things haven't been perfect yet, and maybe they never will be. But thank you again, Jamie, and thank you again, Megan.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure, Tina. We'll send this PowerPoint to Anu, and she can share with the group. And then I did want to point out, we did hear you on the rumble strips. Maybe we can see how they're working on Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast, and then also on M Street Southeast. It's like strips of thermoplastic. So it's subtle. It's not like a speed bump for a vehicle that is several inches high, but it's going to be something that as a person riding a bike, you will feel tactilely as you're going across them. That's on the approach to where people would cross the bike lane to get to where the bus would pick them up. So we'll definitely commit to seeing how those work. And I love the idea of going out and looking at some of these together. So we can, happy to do that. Let us know your availability.
Sure. Like Matt Johnson has done in Montgomery County, if we could be accompanied by Jamie or someone else, that would be really helpful. But thank you again.
Thanks.
Thank you. We really appreciate all your efforts. Thank you again.
Great. Thank you.
Yes. Anu?
Chair Calabia.
Yes. We're into the discussion, right?
Yes. So the next topic is the budget. And I just want to state that, as you are aware, we did launch, we are, everybody's aware of the $750 million budget, right? The year. And the committee has received about at least three emails from me since last end of the week. Through today. So in the last couple of days, working days, you have received some information from me. And the survey started this past Saturday, which was February 10th. So everybody has an opportunity to complete and submit their surveys. Before you begin your discussion, if I may just share this information for the convenience of any members of the public who are also attending this meeting, I would appreciate that.
Sure. Okay. Go ahead.
So the in-person meetings are on February 26th, 27th, and 28th. The public hearings begin at 6 p.m. Before the public hearings begin, each evening there would be an open house, there would be an hour from 5 to 6 where people can ask questions and get responses or get some information through the staff who is going to be available at the public hearing. On Thursday, which is going to be February 29th, this is a leap year, there will be a virtual public hearing starting at noon. Okay, so the in-person meetings, public hearings begin at 6 p.m. The virtual meet public hearing would be at 12 p.m. All right. And I do want to take another moment and show and speak of where this information resides on our website. So anybody who's looking for information, any information regarding this budget, we have all the information on our website. And what I will do is I will describe it, and I will also share my screen for everybody's convenience. So if you would give me one quick moment.
And then later, if you could give us the link to the screen.
Yes. So all the committee members have all the links. And I just want to make sure that any members of the public who would like to get this information, they are able to do so. So if you go to our website, which is WMATA.com, under initiatives, you can click on budget. And that page will give you all the information that you would need. If it, as the team described at the last meeting, that there are flyers in multiple languages, towards the top of the page, you would see all the languages or flyers in PDF formats in multiple languages. Underneath that, you will have information, an overview of the budget. And if you keep scrolling down, you would see information about the budget itself that we have been hearing for last some time. And then you would see the links. You would have multiple links throughout this page giving you information about the proposed budget. You can learn about the FY25 budget and proposed changes. And you can also watch the board of directors discussion. Underneath that, you have links where you can click on and take the survey. And if I just want to demonstrate that, I'm going to click on that link. And if it takes me to the page, the front page of the survey. And there is another, I'm trying to go back and I'm not able to do that at this point. I would stop sharing so that I can come back and share again because I'm not able to see my pages. Oh, there we go. Okay. Another link right besides the take the survey link talks about, would give you information about the in-person or virtual participation. So if you click on that link, it takes you to a page where you would see provide feedback. And this page has information about the in-person hearings, which is Monday, February 26th. That's in Silver Spring. And just for the record, I can state the locations. The first public hearing is at the Silver Spring Civic Building at Veterans Plaza. Address is 1 Veterans Place, Silver Spring, Maryland. The next public hearing is on Tuesday, February 27th. That is at Metro Lafont Plaza headquarters, located at 307th Street, Southwest, Washington, D.C. The third in-person public hearing is on Wednesday, February 28th, at the Arlington County Boardroom, Ellen M. Bosman Government Center. And the address is 2100 Clarendon Boulevard, Suite 307, Arlington, Virginia. On that same page, there is information about virtual public hearing. The hearings will be hosted on Microsoft Teams. You would not need to download Teams or have a Microsoft account to join the Teams. If you're interested in providing video testimony at a virtual hearing, please pre-register by emailing your name and organizational affiliation, if any, to the following email address. speak@wmata.com. That's speak@wmata.com, or call at 202-962-2511 by 5 p.m. the day before the hearing. If you wish to participate by phone, you can call 206-899-2028 during the hearing and enter meeting code 164-729-013. And the advanced registration is not required to provide testimony if you're calling by phone. As the team confirmed at the last AAC meeting, that American Sign Language interpreters will be available at all the public hearings. However, if somebody needs a language interpreter assistance, that needs to be requested. And to contact the Office of Board Secretary, you can call at 202-962-2511, or you can send an email at speak@wmata.com. And the sooner you can contact for any request, that would be better. Now I would stop sharing my screen, but I just wanted to take a moment to share all that information because I know that some members of the public have also joined, and we want to make sure that people have information about how they can participate and give their feedback. Over to you, Chair Calabia.
Thank you very much. People like me need these clues that you've given us, so thank you. Are there any questions or comments about what Anu has said about the upcoming hearings? Any questions?
This is Sandy. I raised my hand.
Yes, Sandy. Sandy, I see your hand, and then Vanessa. So go ahead, Sandy.
Okay. Anu, is it okay for me to share the emails that you sent with the information, and then I add a little bit of explanation to send to a large group of people that I'm connected with who have vision challenges in Virginia, some are in DC, some are in Maryland? Is it okay for me to basically forward your email with additional explanation?
Anu, you're muted.
Thank you, Carol. Sandy, if you need to share the information forward, please feel free to do so.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Hi, Vanessa.
You're muted, Vanessa.
Vanessa? Okay, thank you. My question is for the Maryland location. Is there a particular entrance that we should be mentioning for Metro Access and Uber to drop us off? Is it a front entrance side or how? What entrance?
This is Anil. Vanessa, that's a great question. I will be honest. The only information we have is the address, but if there is any specific entrance, I will check into that and then share that with everyone.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Doris? You're muted, Doris.
I'm sorry, I had to unmute. My concern is regarding the Virginia site, because it's at the Bosman Center, that it is at a station that has no redundant elevator. And it's an old elevator that often goes down. So my concern is that although the elevator is located relatively close to the site, my concern is that people may get in a situation where they aren't able to use that elevator there. Also, I'm wondering where it's expected to drop off people, because there is a small portion of Clarendon Boulevard that goes in front of the building, but the only real more accessible place to let people off is the parking lot, and it's not going to be very easy to tell people how to navigate to the building. So I have a concern about that. The other concern is, why is there a difference in the time of the virtual hearing? Because it'll be right in the middle of the workday, and I don't know, that could be a deterrent, particularly for the people who, the majority of people in Northern Virginia living in Fairfax County, who in fact use Metro Access, but may not be able to do a hearing at 12 noon. So those are concerns that I have about thinking about the accessibility of the sites. And I'm also concerned that PG County has no site, and it will put a burden on PG County residents. So that's my.
Thank you. Any comment, Anu or Carol or anyone else?
This is Carol. I think that we can add a little bit more information on the website as far as which entrance is more accessible. We will inquire and see if we can do that. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else have a question regarding this matter?
Yes, I have a question. For the 20, I think you said the 29th, it's going to be on Teams. So how is that going to work for someone who's deaf? How is Teams going to work on that one? If a person is deaf, can someone explain that to me, how Teams is going to work for that? I'm just curious.
This is Anu. To answer your question, we hold our AAC meetings on Zoom, which is virtual. Mm-hmm. We do have the American Sign Language interpreters. Similarly, when the virtual public hearing is held through Teams, another virtual platform, the American Sign Language interpreters will be able to communicate. Whether they need to be pinned for everyone or any specific individual, that can be managed.
Okay, thank you.
Anu?
Pat, go ahead.
Yeah, Teams supports automatic captioning. Most captioning, is that gonna be turned on?
Yes, we will ensure that does happen.
Right, that's a standard part of the feature, and
yes.
I work with folks who are deaf, and they say it's really, really good. So
yes, okay. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Sure. Thank you for adding that.
Anyone else?
We do not have any other AAC members with their questions.
Then Janice. Janice, you're muted.
Yes, thank you. Two questions. One, thank you for letting us know that you have to register if you're going to attend in person to ask questions. Do you need to register if you just want to attend in person and not necessarily give testimony?
If an attendee is going to participate and give a testimony, then you'd need to register.
You do not.
Correct.
Okay. And the second question was, thank you for letting us know that someone will be available at 5 p.m. to answer questions. Is the 5 p.m. time listed on the website?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. You're welcome.
Any other comments or questions? If not, what I'd like to do is mention my concern. The shortfall that may be covered is now quoted at $450 million. But the original shortfall, which would have created the fiscal cliff, was $750,000. I sent you all today a letter from the Washington Post, which mentions that that we really should be dealing with more than what they may give us, which is $450,000. another question, even if they give us $450,000, apparently the ones who will have to soak up some of the problem are the unions, the operators.
Tino, before you go on, Tino, you said it thousands a couple of times. It's $750 million and $450 million.
Thank
Just
you.
To be clear.
I wish it were only 700. You're right. It's $750 million. And even if we get the $450 million, which is being talked about as offered by the three jurisdictions, this still, that won't help enough because the unions will have to bear the brunt. There's no way we're going to be able to deal with their cost of living and that sort of thing, or maybe even hire new people, etc. So I think that that's a real problem. But beyond that, we're looking at the year beginning July 1st of 2024. And even if we get $450 million or $750 million, we're going to breathe a sigh of relief because we're dealing with that what was thought of as a fiscal cliff on July 1st. But there's also July 1st of 2026 that we really have to think about. And down the road, we should really grapple with the question that WMATA deserves, like many places has, dedicated funding. And that would require not just the three jurisdictions, which is covered by bus and rail, but we should look for help from the federal government. So, as I said, we can breathe a sigh of relief one way or another on July 1st of 2024, but that won't deal with what happens in July 1st, 2025 or July 1st, 2026. We need dedicated funding. We need the feds to help out. So while you can, in your testimony, talk about the immediate needs and what cuts you are fearful of on July 1st of 2024. Let's not forget that July 1st of 2025 is around the corner, and down the way is July 1st of 2026. Talk about the need for dedicated funding and for help from the federal government. Enough for me for now. Anyone else want to add to what people should be thinking about? If not, I don't see, Anu, I can't see whether there's any other hands up. Are there?
Chair Palabia, we do not have any hands up, but we can ask if any members of the public would have any questions or comments. We can take those. So I would ask, I just want to state for the record, Regina Lee had submitted a question for the DDOT team, which has been shared with the team. And the question was about a wheelchair user reaching the pedestrian signal. So that has been made available to the team, and they will respond, and then we can share the response at that point. I see Libra Robinson just raised hand. So go ahead, and when you start speaking, your 2 minutes will begin.
Okay, thank you very much and good evening. I am an African-American woman with braids and a t-shirt. So I really have a comment. A few months ago, I'm not sure if it's the same young lady that's on now, but I brought up a question about the floating bus stops and the fact that a lot of, especially blind or visually impaired, which I am, were having concerns about crossing into the bike lane. She did say that they're working on it and things of that nature. And I just want to say, I'm glad to hear that though everything is not completed, that you have made an effort to at least put up signage to let bike riders know to be cautious. I do like the fact that you have done that. I do like the fact that you have worked on trying to put something on the island just for blind and visually impaired people. And I am in agreement with the gentleman that says that is great, but we still need something on the sidewalk to let us know that we're going towards the island or crossing. But I just wanted to say thank you so much for working on that matter. And I am glad to hear it. And I hope that you continue with the process.
Okay, thank you.
Anu, this is Heidi. I just want to say I have no place to raise my hand, but I did send a request to speak when it's my turn. Thank you.
Okay. Janice, go ahead.
Yes, one more thing. On the website, you have a before and after of the maps for the proposed bus changes. And I don't know if anyone else who's blind or low vision has looked at those, but I don't find them to be accessible. It would be nice if you could also maybe put in a chart that has, parameters of each bus line before and after, and that would be more accessible for JAWS readers and other screen readers to relay that message.
Okay. Next.
Okay. Next would be Heidi, and then we will take Amanda Hillman.
Heidi.
Thank you. A few comments. Doris and Tina, when you said, why are we going backwards with the accessibility? Because the WABA, the Bicycle Association, has the greatest power in DC, period, with the mayor and council. Bike lanes, the disability community has complaining. They impact drop off for Metro Access, so many things. So that's an ongoing fight, but that and the micro scooters and all of those, DoorDash and all of them using that, are the priorities. In my experience, I led the Accessibility Advisory Committee to DDOT for 3 years in DC, ending in December. I have a thing about getting numbers right. I know the article you're talking about, Tino, but WAPO was wrong, and I can give you DC is giving 200 million, Maryland 150, and Virginia 130. That's 480 million, not 400. And if you follow the links that Anu did, they have a whole section, pages and pages. I don't know how visually impaired people are going to, because it's all PDF. So that's a problem, but it goes into great detail about all the cuts Metro is going to make up that difference. And just to clarify the fiscal year, the 2025 fiscal year starts July 1st. Just this one fact, because he doesn't get the year. July 1st, 2024 is the beginning of the 2025 fiscal year. Yep. And they have both years. What's going to happen this year? All 3 years are in all that Anu pointed out to you. And I'll be quiet. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Amanda Hellman. Amanda, when you start speaking, your 2 minutes will begin.
Thank you. Good evening, African-American woman with glasses. And I guess, you know, we have these meetings and we hear a lot about the district, and that's wonderful because I am a district resident, but I am concerned that I guess especially since we have these hearings, I think it's kind of glaring that we don't usually seem to hear about Prince George's County. And I don't know if there's anyone that's on these meetings who is from Prince George's County, but I would have concerns. I might have an opportunity to live in that area, and I don't get the impression that the bus service and the rail service is very viable in those areas. And I'm not sure about the accessibilities with the bus stops, like we were talking about this evening and things like that. And I was wondering if we could get a speaker from Prince George's County to come to one of these meetings and just do a presentation like we've had from the Montgomery County Department of Transportation and today the DDOT people. So that's my request, just to get an understanding of what's happening in Prince George's County and if they are aware or sensitive to accessibility needs in that county. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Next would be Sandy Newsel and then Rico Dancy.
Hi, this Sandy, is Sandy. Hi. So I just wanted to assure Janice that I was able to go on those links today that Anu sent, and I was able to see a very detailed list of the numbers for the bus routes that are proposed to be cut and proposed to have less service. So that might be helpful, although that's not in map form, it's in a very detailed list form. They didn't commit to which of the up to 10 metro rail stations might be closed. It's still left as rather vague, ones that have fewer, lower ridership. But I have a question for Metro staff to help give guidance on if, although I live in Virginia and obviously would be speaking about Virginia as well as the whole Metro area, if I can't go
just because of logistics and timing, the in-person meeting that I could go to would be the one downtown. Is that acceptable? And then part two of that question is, if people can't go to an in-person meeting or the virtual meeting and just choose to answer questions through the survey, will WMATA genuinely pay attention to your comments in the survey question? Thank you.
Sandy, I will send you an email with your responses because of lack of time at this point. But the short answer is yes. Rico, go ahead.
Okay, I would rather ask this question with ODOT was on. If people want to call the 311, you know, for DDoT, if people call 311 using a video phone like VRS, like I have, it always asks them, only asks them for a, if you call the city for 301 for a request something, it always asks, do we have the TID edition number? But if you call 301 on your cell phone, it goes through. But if you call it on your video phone, like I have, it won't go through. So what number do we call if 301 is not going through on our video phone, on my video phone?
Okay, thank you, Rico. We'll follow up. Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. To answer Sandy's question, the bus route changes and the station changes will come up for individual hearings after the budget is passed. And typically what we have done is get an idea of Metro Access customers, schools, hospitals, dialysis, healthcare, that are along the different routes. And so at the hearings for those, make them aware of those issues because they are very important. Because by cutting out those routes, you're cutting out disability access to healthcare and things like that. So that will come up during the hearing. So that's why we have to pay attention after July the 1st when they actually start doing anything that they're going to do. As far as paying attention to what we do, for the bulk of the board, they go by the numbers that come out of the surveys and the written items in the surveys. But where the in-person is really important is the board members that attend those in-person meetings, or even the Zoom meetings. They're looking people in the eye. They're seeing you. They're seeing and hearing the passion. So the hearings have always been impressive. And in major issues, like fare increases and whatever, when there are 120 people coming to talk, it does have as much impact as the written surveys. In years when only 5 or 10 people show up, the surveys sort of dominate. So that's why it's very good to do both and you know, get it straightened out. And for Tino's dedicated funding source, they already have a dedicated funding source. What they need to do is revise the formula, which is what they're working on right now. It's like the federal government has a dedicated funding source for road repair, and that's gas, sales, taxes. But since everybody is using fuel-efficient cars and electric vehicles, they're not collecting sufficient monies from that. So a fixed funding has to be very carefully put in place because things change and the income from a fixed funding source might not always be there. So it's a good point. What they need is people that are aware that they need to pay their bills. And the major ones are going to be the district and Maryland and Virginia. Not so much the federal government, except for the fact that they all live in Washington and they have to get to work. I think I've used my 3 minutes. So bye-bye for now.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Dr. Portman. Chair Karabia, I just wanted to really, really quickly share that if anybody would like to submit their public comments, they can send us an email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
It's 6 o'clock. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Nobody wants to
motion.
Adjourn.
I motion.
So move,
Tina. Thomas, I motion that.
And the second for adjournment.
Second it.
Yeah,
sure. I second it.
And a vote to adjourn. Yes, we're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.